going to be a moment of silence at 11 o'clock, called for by President Obama, to honor the people that were killed and injured in this massacre. What I'll do is start out by just making a few comments and then open it up for questions. First of all, Gabby Giffords is a close friend. She and I were elected in the same year, and the way it tends to work in Congress is that the people you come to Congress with become your closest friends because you spend a lot of time with them. And in fact, the new class, there were 41 of us who were elected on the Democratic side in the election of 2006. Every week we would have a meeting with the Speaker, and also several of us various times would get together really socially to start just building a way together of trying to figure out how to serve in Congress and how to help each other do the job. And Gabby Giffords was an extremely popular member of our class. And by after 4 years, this was the beginning of her fifth year, had become an extremely respected and well-liked member of Congress. And that's on both sides of the aisle. She served on the Armed Services Committee, and everybody really admired her, liked her, and respected her. She's an extremely warm and gracious person, always has time for whoever she sees that might need time, and it can be a senior member or it can be the doorkeeper. It makes no difference to her. She's accessible. She's open. She is really, in my experience, one of the best listeners I've met, not just listeners in Congress, but best listeners that I've met. And then as a legislator, she was extremely passionate. And what also is, I think, just very wonderful about her is that in these times when things are so controversial and heated, she was always gentle but direct and very clear and warm. And what she conveyed when she was taking a very, very strong view, she was one of our leaders on alternative energy, particularly solar, was enormous respect for whoever it was she was speaking with, regardless of how different her opinion was from the person that she may be trying to persuade or that she was trying to persuade her. My wife Margaret and I had dinner with her a while ago, and you know, the conversation was much more about family and friends and books that we had read, and it wasn't all focused on politics. She has a very active life outside of being a very, very busy member of Congress. I met her husband a few times, Mark, who's an extraordinarily accomplished person, as you all know. He's an astronaut, and she's very much of a family-oriented person. Just shortly before this, she went to Rome taking her parents with her. She'd done work with her parents and their family business before she became a legislator in Arizona. So Gabby Giffords, just as a person, any of us who got to know her, inside or outside of politics, felt that we were extremely fortunate to have her in our life. So it's just a devastating personal blow, obviously, for everybody, but for those of us who came to Congress with her and had the opportunity to get to know her personally as well as politically, it's just a terrible, terrible catastrophe. And, you know, she had a great staff. Her office is in Longworth, which is where my office is. And she had young, dedicated, energetic people who got up in the morning trying to figure out how they could serve. And, of course, she lost a staff member, and then there were other people who were coming to see her and tell her what was on their mind, and they died, and some died and some were wounded. So this is just an absolute catastrophe on a personal level for the people who knew Gabby, her family, for the folks in Arizona, and really for all of us when this horrific massacre happened. I was home when I heard about it. A friend of ours lives in Arizona, about a mile from where this happened, and she called up to let us know that it happened, and we turned the TV on, and of course, like everyone else, have just been riveted with the news, and all of us are hoping and praying for the best. This has generated an enormous amount of discussion about the tone of debate in this country and just how volatile it is. And, you know, it's a serious, serious concern. I mean, I don't think any of us know what motivated this person. Obviously, he was very deranged. What triggered his conduct, we don't know. The FBI and other agencies are doing a full-scale investigation. But what we all know is that the tone of the debate has crossed lines in many cases. And, you know, when I think about it and think about how fortunate we are in Vermont, I think that Vermont does have an enormous amount to offer to the rest of the country about the way Vermonters go about their political debate. Vermonters are extremely passionate about issues, but civility matters, and Vermonters understand that. I mean, just look at our state. In the past 8 years, we've had a Republican governor, and we've had a Democratic legislature, and they were able to work together despite the fact that many times they had sharp differences of opinion, and there was no hesitation on the part of our governor or legislative leaders from stating their point of view bluntly, directly, and passionately. But we maintained, I think, in Vermont, and this is a culture, this is a tradition, that whether you're an elected official or you're a citizen going to town meeting or you're a person who gets occasionally involved in politics or you're involved in politics a lot, each of us has this responsibility to treat the people we disagree with the same respect we want to be treated with, and understand that their point of view has as much right to be expressed in a civil way as ours does. And also, what I've learned in the legislative process is that when you fight hard for your point of view, but there's no final legislative victories. And it really suggests that all of us should have some humility that even if we prevail in our point of view, others who lost have to be treated with enough respect so that if they don't win this time, they know they were given a fair hearing and they'll have an opportunity to continue on in the debate. So what I've seen in Vermont, and really it's been my experience as I've served in Congress, is that Vermonters know that civility really matters. It's creating a culture of cooperation, of mutual respect, that creates an environment within which you can contest hotly contested ideas. I mean, the challenges that face any state or country are serious. What kind of energy policy do you have? How do you make healthcare affordable and accessible? How do you pay taxes? How do you pay your bills? What's the level of government spending? These are all issues that motivate people and get them extremely animated. They care about the outcome. They care about it because they see it as affecting not only them, but their kids, their future. And there's different points of view on every single one of those issues. But the only way you ultimately can make progress, and I think this is what all of us are starting to reflect on, is that as much as you passionately advocate your point of view, you do it always with the restraint that the other person, the person with a different point of view, is likely to be motivated with the same high purpose that you'd like to assign to your own motivations. And Vermonters, I think, see that. That's, you know, I look back at just in my own personal experience with the campaign that I had in 2006 against a very, very able Republican, Martha Rainville. And both of us, I think, understood something, because it wasn't us individually, but we understood Vermonters wanted civility and they wanted a positive campaign. And in that campaign, both of us refrained from any kind of negative ads. And the benefit of that ultimately was for Vermonters, because I won that race. She could have won it, but I won that race. But at the end of the day, I think Vermonters who didn't vote for me felt that it was a fair and square race. So they were willing to give me a chance to do the job because they thought it was a fair decision that the voters made. It wasn't the result of media manipulation and negative attacks. And that is, in the long run, what's so important, is this civility is not just about manners. Civility is about creating a culture where the political system, which belongs to the people, can actually effectively solve problems, and where, at the end of the day, you know that if you make a mistake, you can correct it, you're willing to do it. So the Vermont approach, where civility is the foundation of our politics, we need more of in America. So I'll stop my opening remarks here and open it up for questions.
Congressman, I'm not clear as Mark Johnson up at WDEV. So do you believe that there is a connection between this shooting and the level of rhetoric in this country or not?
I don't know. I just don't know. I mean, this is a deranged person, and what motivated him or what triggered him, I don't know. You know, I heard a psychologist who was speaking on one of the morning talk shows who said that she didn't know, but on the other hand, certain things can trigger behavior in a deranged individual. So what motivated this person, what led to it, I certainly don't know.
Do you think you need more security?
Well, you know, I've done 90 town meetings or Congress in your communities in Vermont in the past two terms that I've served, and I've never felt under threat. You know, I've been treated well by Vermonters. We've had some of these Congress in communities and town hall meetings. People have been very animated and on occasion expressed real disagreement, very sharp disagreement with some of the positions that I've taken. But I've never felt that anyone's crossed the line. So, you know, the essence of the job of serving in Congress is to listen to your constituents. You know, most of members of Congress, all of us, Republican and Democrat, are very proud that the Constitution makes the House of Representatives the closest to the people. We have to run every 2 years, and if people don't like what we're doing, or if they don't like what the president's doing, they have a chance under the Constitution to send a message. And for us to be carrying that message, members of Congress are quite proud that they are on the street, they're listening to people, the relationship is direct. So, you know, I certainly intend to continue that.
Congressman, this is Bob Kinzel at Vermont Public Radio. Just following up on Mark's question, though, next time you do Congress in your community, as you mentioned, you've done it many, many times, almost 100 times. The next time you do it, will you be taking security with you?
Well, everything is under review now. There was a discussion on a conference call that had some of the capital of security folks reviewing what the members do and how they do it. So obviously we'll be following instructions by them. But I got to tell you, my personal experience in Vermont with the nearly 100 Congress in your communities that I've done is very, very positive. But, you know, I'm going to I'm not the security expert, but on a personal level, talking directly to Vermonters has always been one of the best experiences, and it's not. I've not been. There's been never anything at one of these Congress in your communities that's been a problem.
You mentioned the tone of the debate and how that might be a contributing factor here. We already see an amazing war of words going on between the political left and the right this morning. Trying to attribute blame and creating this toxic atmosphere. Do you think that the left and the right are to blame here?
You know, you can come up with examples on both sides, and you can have an argument about who does more of it and how much of it is from the vitriol that you hear on the talk radio shows. But the blame argument, I mean, this can just excite. If we try to get into the assignment of blame, I don't know that we'll end up making much progress. What is within our control is for each of us to take responsibility for our tone of voice and our civility or lack of civility. You know, whether you're an elected official, you're in Congress or you're in the Senate or you're the governor, or you're a citizen going to town meeting, all of us have, in my view, responsibility to treat others with mutual respect. And that's what's within our control. And my hope, for instance, we're going to go back, not this week. We were going to go back this week and debate health care. But we'll be going back, I expect, the following week, and we'll have a debate on health care. I don't expect that this massacre is going to change anybody's vote on health care. But I do hope it's going to affect everyone's tone, that all of us will be as passionate in our point of view as we were but that we will refrain from any kind of ad hominem arguments, characterizing or vilifying the people we disagree with as having any motivations less pure than ours. So we'll see, but that's what's within our control. It's how each of us as a legislator or as a citizen expresses ourselves and engages in the debate. Civility matters.
Congressman, this is John Gregg at the Valley News. Hi. Apparently, Mr. Loeffner, was suspended from the community college. One of the professors had even called 9/11 on him. And then November 30th, he goes out and legally buys a semi-automatic handgun. Is it too easy to obtain a gun in this country?
You know, my position has always been that the states have to make those decisions. And Vermont, in its traditions, is a lot different than some other places. So that's been my position, and we'll all have to step back, but that continues to be my position now.
Well, Vermont is even more, probably as permissive as any state in the country. Given that there are deranged people out there, is that a suitable thing for the law of the land to be?
Well, I think that the states are the ones that have to make those final decisions.
What about taking care of the mentally ill? We've certainly seen a lot of cutbacks in that kind of health care. Could we perhaps approach this from the back door and maybe reach more people who might be dangerous by getting them care in advance?
The answer to that is yes. I mean, there's enormous pressure on our budget to cut back on services. We're seeing that at the state and the federal level. And obviously, you've got to do everything you can to try to help folks who have mental illness. But, you know, I just don't know anything about, other than what I read and what you read, I don't know anything about this individual, other than it's very, very clear that this was an extremely deranged person.
Again, this is Steve Seitz at the Eagle Times. What about just generally keeping track of those known to be mentally ill? We had that kid who shot up Virginia Tech a couple of years ago, and apparently a number of people in the system knew he might be dangerous, but because of various conflicts and privacy laws, things like that, nobody was able to do anything about it.
Well, if a person is, you know, right now under the law, if a person is known to be a danger to himself or to others, then the law and the courts can take appropriate action and actually take that person into custody.
So it would be helpful, whoever's typing, for those of us who are trying to get some audio here, if you could mute your typing, that'd be great. Thanks.
Okay.
Getting back to the mentally ill question about tracking, this is Matt Sikorski up at the Free Press in Burlington. Obviously it's hard to put somebody in custody if they have not made a specific threat against the person, but they're just kind of a threatening tone. Is there any legal things that maybe or laws that should change about people that are considered dangerous, or would that be stomping on individual rights too?
Well, you know, it's a very, very difficult call. I mean, if a person, there are laws in the books that allow the court to take action against a person who's a danger to himself or others. And how you make that determination is always a case-by-case basis.
Mm.
And it's obviously an enormous challenge in a free society.
Now, getting back to the question of rhetoric, you know, an awful lot of it. I mean, I don't think there's any denying that there's much more heat on the side of the right than there is on the left. You know, there's 3 hours of 6 hours sometimes of conservative talk radio spewing this stuff every day. There's endless Fox News. Would you support a general boycott of those things if people wanted to do that?
Well, I don't support boycotts of free speech. I support all of us taking responsibility for what we say. You know, in politics, politicians will conform their behavior to what voters reward. I mean, if voters really reject over-the-top speech, then you're going to see that affecting the tone and rhetoric of the politicians who are running for office or serving in office. I mean, this is really a responsibility we have in a free society. That is to be passionately engaged, but respectful of people with whom we disagree.
How would you characterize the bullseye that Sarah Palin's PAC put on the 20 members of Congress she was targeting and using rhetoric like the words reload?
Well, that's in my view, inappropriate.
Do you think it was there any causal?
Well, you know, I can't speculate on a particular thing. What I think all of us know is that there's an immense amount of over-the-top rhetoric and symbolism, and there's two problems with that. Number one, it creates a sense of anger, and you know, you had some politicians talking about bullets, not ballots. I mean, things like that are obviously provocative and hurtful. They're harmful to maintaining civility in a democratic society. The second criticism of that is that it's the absence of an argument. You know, it's like talking to somebody who, when they want to make a point, the only thing they can do is use epithets or swear. They don't use reason or logic. So it becomes the escape for a lazy mind to be refusing to lay out the logic of your argument. So all of us, I think, and I'm repeating this, it's a mutual responsibility on Republican, Democrat, or Independent, and it's a mutual responsibility between the elected officials and the people who elect us.
All right, that was a press conference held live right now by Congressman Peter Welch. I think we pretty much got the gist and some of the substance of what he had to say about someone who...
Are we still on? That might have been Mark going.
I can still hear you, Congressman.
All right, I guess...
And this is Paul. Are there any other questions before we end the call?
No, I think it's been pretty thorough.
Congressman, where will you be for the moment of silence?
I am going to be down at Dan and Witt.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
All right.
All right, thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
Thanks much.
All right.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot.